Hi everyone, I'm Evan Murray. This is Music Industry Insights. This podcast is about the country of Canada. Today, we look at Canada from west, central, and east. This is a complete information podcast about how to develop in Canada, how to tour in Canada, how to be a musician, a successful musician in Canada. The information comes from three successful musicians in Canada. One from the West, from the band Arcana Kings. One from the East, called Andre Petipa and the Giants. And one from Central, called My Son the Hurricane. So you can look up those three bands. Each of them are successful on their own merit. Each of them have internationally toured. Each of them have a career and make a living playing music in the country of Canada. What are some of the challenges in Canada? Canada is huge, okay? Canada is the second largest landmass on Earth. It's about 8,000 kilometers from west to east. You're going to hear all of this information in this podcast. There's one part of Canada we didn't mention, and that's French Canada. So Canada is a bilingual country. That means it has two official languages. Those official languages are English and French. The weird thing is that French is a minority language. There's actually more people in Canada that speak Punjab and Chinese, both Mandarin and Cantonese. I'm sure there's more people that also speak Hindi in Canada than there is people that speak French. Montreal is in the province of Quebec. Quebec is the French part of Canada, but Montreal is a bilingual city. Even though you will not be able to read English on any signs there. So I'm born in Montreal, actually. I am Canadian. And when I'm not in Taiwan, I actually live in Newfoundland and Labrador. I live on the Buron Peninsula, where we do host the Live at Heart Newfoundland Showcase and Conference, which is the sister conference to Live at Heart Norborough. Anyways, this is the podcast to listen to if you want to develop and tour in Canada. These three guys were joining me to create ITAC, the International Touring Association of Canada. The pandemic happened. The pandemic never got better, and we just kind of forgot about it. You can check that out on Facebook, International Touring Association of Canada. You know, I'm still up for it. I'm sure the guys are still up for it. So, I mean, when the world starts touring again, you know, more frequently, I'm definitely open to that conversation. But take what you can out of this. This is the country of Canada. I'm telling you right now, if you want to know anything about the way the music industry works, this is the podcast to listen to. And I'm really glad I got to do it. I'm really glad I'm sharing this information with you. Take what you can, extract what you can, use what you can, and enjoy it.
I think it's interesting to try to look at Canada regionally. Like, even though these guys have careers that are across Canada and international, I want to look at Canada regionally from their perspectives, because Canada is such a big country. I mean, you know, you're looking at probably about somewhere around 8,000, roughly 8,000 kilometers horizontally from east to west. And, you know, when we look at that kind of distance and how air flights, like, it's not like Europe where, like, you know, it is expensive to travel by plane in Canada. You know, there's all kinds of challenges, especially that, you know, Canada is a very underpopulated country for its size. And there's, you know, I mean, cities are far and few between. So anyways, without further ado, thanks for joining me today, guys. Really nice to see you. I'm going to start from west, central to east. So I'm going to start with my buddy, my Canadian bud, my bud, eh? Okay, so I'm going to start with John McQuaig from Arcana Kings. John, thanks for joining us, and please introduce yourself and then pass the mic.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for having me, first of all, guys. It's good to see everybody, even though, you know, we're not in person yet. But it's Johnny McQuaig here. I am with the band Arcana Kings. Yeah, what to tell? We've been a busy band in the past, you know, traveling internationally and across Canada. Got my start up here in Canada. It's nice that you said, Evan, that, you know, how big Canada is. Let me give you a perspective of my guys are from Western Canada that we travel. One guy lives in Regina. One guy lives in Saskatoon. I live in Nelson, BC. One guy is up in Alberta. So for me to go to Regina just for rehearsal, that's a 12-hour drive just to get there one way. It's crazy, I know. But as in Western Canada here, just gigging on a weekend, that's a normal thing for us.
Okay, but so let's put that in perspective. You guys aren't rehearsing every day.
Right. No, we're not rehearsing every day. No. I really wish we could. Yeah. And honestly, technology is not quite there. There's still a little bit of latency, and that really, you know, makes everything a little crazy. But I'm hoping that's going to get figured out too. But yeah, like just to go and travel to do a gig on a weekend, we're traveling 8 to 12 hours. That's a normal weekend for us. One way travel, 8, 12 hours. I mean, for me to go to Edmonton, that's 10 and a half, 11 hours. To me to go to Calgary, that's 8 hours. You know, to Vancouver, that's 8 hours.
And you're talking about the closest near it. You're talking about the nearest major city to you, right? Like, let's say that too.
Oh yeah.
Cause that's important.
Well, that's actually, the nearest.
I guess the nearest where you're stationed in BC, the nearest actually large city would be Spokane, I think, in the United States.
In the US. Spokane. Washington.
Which you can't go and play unless you have special permission if you're going to make any money, right?
Yeah. That's okay. As you guys know, that's a whole other, you know, get visas, be part of the union, do the whole craziness, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, that's not just, hey, let's go out on a gig on a weekend. You got to plan that. And, you know, even though it's only 2.5-3 hours away, it's a completely different country. As, you know, your people from Europe would know, it's not like, hey, we're going into our next door neighbors. It's a completely different thing. You got to plan for it. You got the right paperwork. You got to do that kind of stuff. And that's something, you know, we've done over the years and everything. And, making albums, doing writing, everything's been online anyhow for us. You know, like we're not centralized. We're not in one area. So when we do writing with the band, you know, I'll come up with the initial song. I'll send it out online to everybody. Hey, what do you think? You know, we chit chat. We do what we got to do to make it happen. And then they would get back to me and then we figure it out from there. So it's a process here in Canada. And the other thing you forgot to mention, Evan, is the weather, because that is a key thing in Canada here. It's great to tour in the summer, but in the winter, we're hitting areas of minus 30, minus 40, minus 50. And it's not like, hey, let's just go jump in a van. I mean, what happens if you break down? That's, you know, you could die in the winters.
Yeah, because of the distance between towns, and also the danger of the ice on the road and that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, yeah. So it sounds like Western Canada is obviously like it has its challenges 100%. And we're going to dive deeper into that as we go here. But thanks a lot, John, for your input. How about you, Dan? Like we're traveling to Central Canada now. And tell me where you're based out of, what you're doing, and tell us about you, Dan.
Right. So my name is Dan O'Shea. I am a drummer / manager / agent for 16 or so acts. I'm in St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada, which is about an hour southwest of Toronto. And Ontario has its share of issues as well. Of course, when you're talking about playing major urban centers, Toronto, for those of you who don't know, has about 3 million people. And just our Golden Horseshoe area, which basically is from Niagara Falls wrapping around all the way to around Oshawa in Ontario, holds about half of the population of Canada. So
of Canada itself. So let's just
of Canada.
So the thing is, like, yeah, you got Toronto and then you call it the Golden Horseshoe. And what go ahead.
Yeah. So which includes Mississauga, Oakville, Hamilton, Niagara Falls, St. Catharines. So all in that. Yeah, there's all these, you know, so these big urban centers. So what's nice is that, you know, for Ontario bands, you have this ability to go and do these milk run tours, which is lovely, which means, you know, you go and do 2 days, you come home, you go two days, come home, things like that. You have some opportunities. We're also exceptionally close, several borders to the United States, but like, my friend in the West there said, it's not just as easy as me going over to Buffalo, which is literally 20 minutes from my front door. It's a different game. Ontario is a tour friendly place.
Yeah.
And, but you know, certainly I have toured in the winter and hit moose and things like that and had the true Canadian experience. And so I will never go back to Newfoundland in the winter. But that's all part of the deal, you know, where you basically live on Tim Hortons and Subway sandwiches. You know, luckily for myself personally, things have gone much better, and we don't have to do that sort of thing. But Ontario has its challenges, but not like
Western Canada.
but not like Western Canada. But I mean, that being said, you wake up in beauty every day whenever you live in Western Canada. So
that's true. That is true.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're learning. There's a little bit of give and take, but I think. The thing is, too, like when I was growing up in Canada and like kind of learning, you know, meeting more musicians as I was getting older and stuff like that, and learning about people who lived in the Toronto area or say Hamilton or London or Guelph or Windsor or et cetera, I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe how good you guys got it, you know, because it was like you were driving 1 hour to 2 hours to like another city. Now, I mean, obviously Canadian cities are not, you know, like European cities or even Asian cities, where you go into a city and every city you go to is like 11 million, 10 million, 8 million. I mean, Canadian cities are quite smaller. Like for instance, like living in Taiwan for the last 2 years, like when I leave a city, I don't even know that I left that city because like the cities are like so connected kind of thing. And I think part of the beauty of Canada, you know, part of the beauty of Canada is the fact that there's an ever-changing topography, and I think it's an adventure. There's something more adventurous about touring inside of Canada. So thanks a lot, Dan. That was pretty insightful and a good chuckle because, yeah, no matter where you go in Canada, you're going to see a Tim Hortons in a Subway. It's just the way it is. It's just the way it is, yeah. So coming from I would say East, and when we talk about the East Coast, we talk about Atlantic Canada because the Atlantic Ocean is Canada has the Pacific Ocean and then the Atlantic Ocean on either sides of it. But so when we try to qualify Eastern Canada, because part of Central Canada is Eastern Canada too, strangely enough. So we're going all the way East, and I got my buddy here, my buddy. I got Andre. I got Andre Pepatitis with me from Andre and the
Pedipa.
You do it. Pedipa and the giant.
Pedipatitis. That sounds like a disease.
I was going to say this.
Stop it. Don't even touch that.
I had pepatitis last year.
Nobody mispronounced that. That was an absolute accident. Andre, tell us your story and give us some of the challenges we're all talking about challenges. I didn't mean, that's not what we're trying to do here. Just tell us about.
Tell me about.
Yeah, go ahead. Hit me.
So I'm in Nova Scotia, Canada, the east coast of Canada, and the
the population here is under 1 million. And I live in a spot now called Pictou County. I just moved here last week, and it's a great community. A lot of active musicians and great local bars. And I find over the last few years, there's been many local breweries and more spots like that opening up, which has hosted live music. And the partnership with alcohol and music has kind of been what's been taking over Nova Scotia lately. And it's okay. These microbreweries, these, yeah, as Johnny takes a sip of his moonshine over there.
Cheers.
What are you into, Johnny?
Oh, we'll discuss that later.
All right.
I want to hear you.
So, yeah, the thing for us over the last year, we have been fortunate enough to be able to continue gigging. There's been months, obviously, 4 or 5 months where we couldn't. But what we did was I play in a band called Andre Pettibon and the Giants, as Evan was saying. We are a hard rock act. So we stripped down our sound to accommodate a more sit-down style show. So we went fully acoustic. And that's what kind of helped us get through the pandemic and make us still be able to play our style of music during what you kind of say is a shutdown style of year. And now that things are opening back up, we're booking shows where Dano's at, and we're booking shows all over Canada for the next year and a bit. And we're planning for an Australia tour in the winter. So things are starting to open up, and we're just looking forward to having a bit of a more normal life. East Coast of Canada is great.
Yeah, let's talk about more. Let's dive more into the East Coast of Canada. So you mentioned that, like, when you said where I am, it's less than a million people. You actually meant the entire province where you are is less than a million people. So
Nova Scotia is, like, from one end to the other, I think it's about a 10 to 12 hour drive. Okay. So unlike Johnny, I don't have to drive 8 hours to the next show. Right. But the thing is, with Nova Scotia, you don't want to overplay, because everything is so close. You don't want to be playing every weekend in a spot that's an hour away.
Well, no, and let's touch on this for a second. Let's touch on this. Tell me more about the East Coast, because you're four provinces, right? Like, you got so you got Prince Edward Island, you got New Brunswick, Nova Scotia. And the
Newfoundland.
Yeah, so where I live in Newfoundland. So talk about touring in the East Coast. Give us a little, give us a little rendition of what that's like.
So touring in the East Coast of Canada, it's the weekend thing, the Thursday, Friday, Saturday. There's not many opportunities throughout the week. Unless you're a singer-songwriter, you can do like a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, say like a 6 to 8 show. But for bands, it's totally difficult, because this scene on the East Coast is a lot of Celtic music, and it's a lot of solo acts or duo acts. So I find that's definitely a challenge for a band to travel and tour nightly on the East Coast.
So if they're touring, let's say, and you say there's like, because that's another thing I think we need to identify as well. Like, I think it's important that the East Coast kind of holds this like Celtic tradition a little bit more so, let's say. Well, I mean, it's in Montreal, and there's parts of Toronto and stuff, so I don't want to say it's not, but, and I mean, John's on the West Coast playing bagpipes, so, it's like, what are you guys talking about? But the thing is, truthfully, culturally wise, the East Coast, for some reason, has kind of stayed more to a Celtic tradition.
Traditionally.
I mean, you can feel that in Newfoundland, you can feel that in Nova Scotia. I'm not talking about the race of somebody or the color or nothing like that. It's just true. Like, there's just a lot more, focus on this Celtic sort of music,
history,
culture. Yeah. History. Yeah. So when we talk about that, like, is it competitive? Like, is it super challenging to kind of, to make your own way through that kind of cultural cloud, I guess, or something?
I understand. Yeah. Well, I know there's totally two different scenes, the Celtic music scene, and then you've got your rock scene. So the Celtic music scene, they have their nightly gigs, and it's a lot more for tourists as they're in for the summer. So obviously last year, things have been different, but it's not a competitive thing. And a lot of the acts play together. So they'll be playing one night at, say, a gig that's an hour away from the one there. So they're able to do their whole circuit and then start over again. It's definitely a spot where it's easy for those solo acts or the duo acts, like I was saying, and the Celtic scene prospers just because of that whole tourist scene. And Cape Breton in particular is a beautiful spot. I've lived there for 5 years and I just got off the island last week. So I've seen a lot of that, and I actually learned about the culture a bit more, knowing I had to kind of educate myself and what's around me. So I was able to understand the music a bit better. I had some musicians I was playing with that played fiddle in a rock band. So it was cool to witness that and to collaborate. And I think,
okay, so you're no, that we can touch on that, because the guy you're collaborating with is actually a famous Canadian. I remember he was like, I've seen your posts, and obviously I stay in touch with you, and the fiddle player you're talking about is Ashley McIsaac. Like he had kind of like a rise in stardom in Canada in the '90s. Tell me what that means. Cause I mean, we're going to touch on the Canadian music industry, and that means we're going to talk a little bit about how you develop. And it's also how the impact Much Music had. And then like when that left the scene, how important is it to work with like quote unquote famous Canadians? And cause I mean, is there any famous Canadians still to this day? Like, I mean, besides globally famous, I mean, without Much Music and radio is not as intact as it used to be, we're not seeing as many stars now. Is that fair to say that? So let's touch on that. How do you develop in Canada? I'm going to start with you, Andrea. We're going to go backwards this time. We'll go you and then Dano and then to John. But how are you developing in Canada? You got a band, you got songs. Walk me through the steps, and we'll just kind of piece this together as we go.
Totally. For me, social media is number one. You got to be active every single day on that. And I just try to keep engaged with our fans or growing new fans by just being interactive and sharing personal stories. I've found that over the last few years, if you're more insightful about your personal life or things you like, that has kind of helped.
But this is what I want to touch on. So the fact is, in Canada, people are really using Facebook. Like,
yeah,
that's not the case in every country, but in Canada, I know it is. There, people love to use Facebook in Canada, right? Is that fair to say
Facebook
that?
Facebook and Instagram's another huge one. Instagram is my personal favorite because I don't have to listen to Aunt Judy's stories. You know what I mean? Yeah, you just go on there, you see the pictures and a quick blurb.
Okay.
Facebook is full of drama.
So Facebook is a good medium. Instagram is a good medium. You're sharing personal stories. What about radio? What about television? What about Spotify? Like, what about these things?
Radio's been great. Radio here is actually, a lot of people still listen to radio because it is such a small place. They want to hear the local news and they want to hear the local music.
So
the
only thing, and that's one thing we got to talk about.
Yeah.
Canadians still listen to the radio.
Yeah. Right? Like, I mean, definitely
people in other countries don't. I mean, I don't even know if I have, I do have a radio in my car. I've never even used it, I don't think. But so people use the radio in Canada. So that's significant. You're using Facebook, you're using Instagram, and you're trying to get radio tracking where you are. So Dan, what about you? Like, let's talk about you. What are some of the ways that you see collecting assets, you see trying to develop yourself where you are or in Canada?
Certainly. So of course, all those things that were just mentioned, there is an expectation that your music is available. So even though we know things like Spotify that pay dog shit, what's important is that when I look at something like Spotify, I understand that there's analytics involved in that. And they keep great records of who's listening to you, et cetera, et cetera. And I like to deep dive into those things. And so for us, one of the really neat things about Canada and radio is that we have the CBC, which is the nationwide radio. So as well as having, obviously, regional terrestrial radio and larger radio stations that maybe hit the province, we also have this CBC. And I think for groups like my own, which obviously will never really see much terrestrial radio play, you can still get some really nice play from the CBC, which goes a long, long way. I'm a big fan of, because this country is so vast, and because the cities, like we said, are not enormous, you know, whenever you're consistently in Ontario, at least when you're consistently touring, you can really build up multiple markets. It's not like in Newfoundland where you have Corner Brook and Paradise and Mount Pearl.
Corner Brook, yeah.
You know, like you're really limited, right? And so that's kind of, you know, what I'm always trying to tell young bands is that, you know, we have to work on your five markets, and then after that we'll work on others. And it doesn't mind if that market is Angus, Ontario of 10,000 people, because at least it's a market still. I use all those things that we're saying, but you know,
so your approach. I like this five, yeah. You're picking five places to develop, and you literally mean like a town, yeah, a city. Let's
yeah, absolutely. So if we said we want to use Toronto, Ontario, Ottawa, London, St. Catharines, and Hamilton, and we'd expect you to play one of those places at least every 2.5 to 3 months and start to see some exponential growth over the year. You know, people who are starting to come out and starting to care, you know, those people who are interacting with you, who are starting to follow you on your socials and things like that. And then invariably, I'm a money guy, you know, like to me, money is the metric that proves that people care. So, you know, are we starting to see some sort of growth there? And so whenever I'm doing agent stuff, that's where I'm starting people at first. And they're like, oh, but we were already there. I don't care. You know, whereas right. Where it's a little bit different when you're in a place, like you're saying Nova Scotia, well, it's like, well, yeah, I can only go down to Yarmouth so many times, you know? And so that's one of the things that Ontario really offers that is, you know, I think if bands were coming to Canada, that's where they would want to start. And unless, like you said, they had a particular Celtic flavor, then I for sure want to send them to the East Coast. But Ontario has like this real ability for growth, like quick growth metric. You can do Ontario tours, and and you can cover a lot of ground. Well, physically a lot of ground, but figuratively a lot of ground as well. So for me personally, it's been hitting that festival circuit in the summer. For my group, we play a ton of folk festivals, which is funny because it's a 12-piece, like, rippingly loud horn, it's rap, hip-hop band. But one of the things that I always say as an agent is pitch where you belong. And I always told folk festivals, and we've played, you know, all the biggest ones, when it's Hillside and Riverfest and Mariposa and all of them, that after your headline, or after Jason Isbell, or after Bruce Coburn, or after whoever, people are generally going to be most likely to leave, and you have to keep them there. And that's where I belong. And so, you know, it's always pitching those things. Like Ontario has this like super rich amount of festivals in the summer. Like, it's so wonderful. So does BC. I've had some like wonderful times at BC, and Nelson in particular at Spirit Bar that our friends talk about. So there is some really, it's just such a diverse country. It just blows my mind. You know, anyone who has the ability to go those 4,000 kilometers, like you mentioned, should, because the country is almost unrecognizable province to province sometimes.
Well, I mean, 4,000 is only half the country, really. So it's not.
Yeah.
So this is really interesting. So you're talking about, you know, hitting cities over and over again. You're talking about, mm-hmm. you know, using the social medias. Are you buying, like, are we buying Google ads in Canada? Are we buying, like, are we buying advertisements on Facebook and pointing them? Like,
yeah.
If you're going to develop in these five places, are you putting money in the internet to hit these five places?
Always. I, you know, I'm a big fan of pay first, question it later. And, yeah. You know, when possible. It's been a tough year for that at the moment, but, yeah, it's, you know, obviously using everything you can. And I think you'll see that, you know, when people's social metrics grow, they're posting on Facebook and showing these, and people are tagging each other, and it starts, you know, they're engaging with each other. That's the whole point of the platforms. Mm. You know, I won't even say my age, but it ain't getting any younger. And so, you know, when I see things like TikTok, which does not work for a guy like me. I still see that it holds some value. I just need someone else to man that helm for me, because nobody needs to see my 6'5" ass dancing to convince someone to come to my show. It'll probably have the adverse effect. So we're using everything at our disposal. So that is things like sending press releases to the local paper, like the old days, and, you know, targeting ads. That shit works. You know, it does work. And if you have it at your fingertips, and like you said, Canada uses Facebook and Canada uses Instagram, especially those two. And depending on who your age group is of your people, mine, I know what my metrics are. Yeah. The people who love my group are like 32 to 44. Okay, that's fine. Originally, I thought it'd be younger, but it ain't. Yeah. Those people are on Facebook. So that's where my money is.
So that's an interesting conversation, guys. I mean, like, when we're talking about like how, you know, like in Nova Scotia, in Eastern Canada, you kind of got to be a little bit more weary about how you're touring and what you're doing. You're still using the same, but you're still, you know, and you don't, the thing is, you need to be more aggressive when you're in Central Canada, like when you're in Ontario about that, but you're still using the same tools, because the thing is, like, even though you guys are basically like, I mean, the distance from Niagara Falls to like where you are in, Port, where is it, Andre? Where are you?
I'm in Pictou County right now.
Pictou County. So
probably 16, 17 hours.
Yeah, man. Like a drive, and it's still like a 4-hour flight. So, I mean, like you're bigger. You're like further than like almost a stretch of Europe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
And you can certainly have what I would call regional rock stars, which are people who are huge in Ontario who do nothing outside, and people who, like, I've been to Newfoundland and heard of people who are massive there who don't leave the rocks because they're Bono of Newfoundland.
Right.
So, it's like, so you can definitely have that when it's that big of a thing. You know, there are definitely what we can call East Coast, you know, rock stars in Canada, of course. And Ashley MacIsaac would be a perfect example of one of them, you know.
The fiddle player that Andre's playing with, you know, collaborating with. I mean, he was a star in Eastern Canada, 100%.
Yeah.
Well, his first record, actually, he funded by himself, and then he sold 1 million copies when he was like 16 years old. And he literally didn't have a plan. He had nothing. He just went and did his show,
and it's fiddle music, awesome. Like, it's all instrumental, right? Like,
it is. But then his first record, he said, like, he literally went and did punk rock song at the end of it, and then he did a bunch of different things. So he was kind of being innovative in his own element, like no one has ever done before. This was like the early '90s. So he did his thing. He was great with causing a scene. He was one of those guys that do a publicity stunt. I think he was on, what was it, Conan or something, and then he did a high kick in a kilt with nothing on underneath.
Okay. That'll give you some
king of publicity.
Right. Yeah. Okay,
I've got some stories for you, Andre, about Ashley. I did some touring with him one time.
Great.
Another day, but I'll tell you all about
Yes.
Okay, John, so let's talk about Western Canada. You've heard now about these. I mean, I know you've toured all over Canada. You've been all over the world. But you're hearing from Andre about what it's like for him to develop in Eastern Canada, or, you know, his game plans. Then you hear from Dano inside of, you know, Central Canada. And let's talk about Western Canada. Let's talk about you.
It's you know what? It's kind of a mixture of both those things thrown in together, except for – we have genres within genres out here. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you're rock, you're country, you're folk, you're whatever, those are specifics out here. You can't mash them together. If you go into a club or a venue, you know, as a rock band, and it's a singer-songwriter type of venue, you're going to get killed. It's just not going to work.
Man, you're touching on something that, you know what, like, you're blowing my mind. Because, like, I grew up, even though I was born in Eastern or Central Canada in Montreal, I grew up in Western Canada, and you just totally, like, flashback to, like, a cultural flashback where you're absolutely right. Like, it is like that in Western Canada. It's not like that in Eastern Canada as much. It really isn't. But in Western Canada, it is. Like, if you're in a country bar, you better be playing country music.
Oh, yeah. Or you'll be killed.
Let's keep talking.
That's it. You're done.
John, come on. You just touched on something that's so significantly Western Canadian. That's so true. Keep going.
Like Dan said, you have to know your market. You really have to know who your audience is and why you're going there. The thing about Western Canada is you don't tour for the sake of touring. There has to be a reason. There has to be an outcome. There has to be a plan. Because like it's so easy to be in the wrong place here, and it'll kill you. It'll just destroy you. You'll be financially broke. And trust me, I've worked for agents that have said, hey, just play here. It'll be great. Don't worry about it. And they get their commission. You know, and at the end of the night, you're standing there going, what just happened? You know, I feel worse than when I came in this room. You know, so you really have to know your market. But the upside of that is once you've done it enough times and you know where you're supposed to be playing, you grow that quickly and you become friends with everybody. And it's like, it's a great time every time you go out. And it really does. Now, like I said, there's genres within genres. There used to be and still is to a point a huge cover band scene out west. Now, cover band is playing music that you hear on the radio and that kind of stuff. And if you go in as you're a cover band and that's all you do is songs that you hear on the radio, you can make a pretty lucrative living out west. But as a
band. Now we got to touch on that for a second, because that's another factoid about Western Canada. Is that Western Canadian bands are getting, like, now in the cover scene, let's say, of course, which is like, I mean, I don't want to focus on this too much, but I do want to talk about the fact that Western Canada pays their artists more. And I mean, it's just a fact. Because
absolutely.
Even when I was a touring musician and when I'm in Eastern Canada, the kind of fees we're getting versus the kind of fees we got in Western Canada, I mean, it's a joke. I mean, it was like,
was it because of the population, like people at the shows, or what was the reasoning?
Well, no, just
yeah,
when we're doing shows and they had, oh, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, John, but like when we had, like, say, guarantees, right? So when they're like, hey, we're going to have a guarantee, like the guarantees were just like some significantly higher in Western Canada all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and then if it was a guarantee slash door deal or whatever, I was still making, I mean, now remember, I haven't toured in Canada for years. John still is. That's why we're talking to him. But tell us about that, John. So
that's exactly it.
Go ahead.
Please. That's exactly it. We used to go out and we'd have a guarantee. Now, these were clubs at the time that would have music, you know, four nights a week, and it'd be the same band four straight nights. Or if you were going back two for two nights in a row as a cover band, you'd be making a lot of money. Now, when you come in as a original band, you know, you would have to win over the audience really quickly. And the thing that I learned real quickly and how to be an original band in Western Canada was do your show and pick one or two cover songs that you do differently than anybody else, and you do it your way, and you pull those out at certain times of the night, and you can do anything else for the rest of the night.
Hey, look, we're touching on some really significant stuff here. Like, guys, true, we're really filling the void of information here, because so let's, I love to just stop the interviews all the time and just summarize what we're talking about. So in Eastern Canada, what we're talking about is that there's a low population. It's the most underpopulated place in Canada, even though places are closer, right? Per se, they're closer than Western Canada. So you can get around Eastern Canada a lot more, but it's underpopulated. So you want to be strategic about when you're doing shows there, these kind of things. And we also know that there's a big Celtic kind of culture in the music there as well. So you have to kind of try to be, you have to be conscious of that, like when you're going in there and doing your thing, right?
Yeah, that's more specifically in Cape Breton, but throughout Nova Scotia, like most towns only have one to two bars. And getting the people out is tough because bars are expensive, drinks are expensive, and people like to show up late at night. Like they like to show up in the last hour of the bar.
That's another thing that's very unique. John, I'm coming back to you, so just give me a second. We are going to talk more about Western Canada. I just want to talk about the identity stuff right now.
Yeah.
Identifying the territories, because that's another thing we have to talk about. Eastern Canada, people don't go out until it's like midnight or like 11 o'clock or 1 in the morning. They're like, the bar will be empty until it's like, you know, there's a peak hour, let's say, in in Atlantic Canada. And I don't think it's like that in other places of Canada at all, you know, from my
experience. Not here anymore,
like,
no.
Like, Maritimers love to go, like, get pissed at home and go to the bar at, you know, later than 11 o'clock. That's what they do, right? Okay, so, and then in Central Canada, we're dealing with the major population, right? There's a major population, lots of cities. And you're saying, hey, pick five places and attack them. Right? Like pick five places and develop there. Develop those five places. Let me just ask you this. Play, go ahead.
Yeah. And play on those peak nights, you know, because there's ease of travel. You know, you really want to be playing on the peak nights. It's not like certain, when you're going across Canada, you know, you're playing on a Monday, sometimes a Tuesday, a Wednesday. None of that needs to exist. Those are the cover band nights. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you don't want to be fighting against those people who have a well-known, if you have a well-known cover band in a town, people are going there. So, you know,
that's a party. A party night, right? Like that.
Yeah, it's a party. And so, you know, so play on the Fridays, the Saturdays, or the Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, then go home. Then, you know, work a day job if that's your thing, and then go the other direction, go to London, Sarnia and Windsor, and then do that again. So that's something that we have, you know, that regional ease.
Okay. Interesting. Now, John, you know, all back to you in Western Canada, and you're identifying some things that, like, again, just kind of smacked me in the side of the face and made me remember my life kind of thing. And yeah. Those, you know, like, it's really particular there. It's really particular. Yeah. Like, I mean,
yeah, it is.
Albertans and Saskatchewanites and Manitobians and Manitobians, I don't know. You know,
like British Columbians.
Yeah, Colombians, you know, but I mean,
they're British Columbians.
They're very particular. They're very particular about what they're listening to. Like, you're hitting a crowd. And the other thing you're saying, it's, you know, cover bands are making money there. So,
yeah, I mean, you've got cover bands and tribute acts that are making big money, but here's the thing with original bands. You can make more money than cover bands if you do what everybody else is saying, what Dan and Andre are saying. Like, look, Facebook is huge in Canada. If you've got a following and you get people out, you can still do a guarantee, because people will come out here in Canada, in Western Canada. They will come and see you if it's like the circus is coming to town. If you've got something different. You know, I mean, for us, we're not just a rock band and we're not a Celtic band, but people see the bagpipes, they see my kilt, and then they come out, and every single time I play, they always say the same thing. That's not what I expected when I saw you. You know, you got to think, for us, you got to think AC/DC, Long Way to the Top. You know, we're rock, and it's a rock and band with bagpipes as a side gimmick that gets me into so many different doors, because it is different out here in the West. You don't have it like in the East. Yeah, I could see 100 bands doing that, but in the West, and we're so far away that it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. I mean, for me to get to the West or to the East, sorry, that's like 3 days of driving. 3 to 4 days to get out to see you guys.
It might as well be another country. It might as well be another.
Oh, absolutely.
Another part of the world. Right? Like, so
yeah, it is.
So I want to touch on this. Like, I need to condense the time. That's also why I'm jumping in and kind of trying to, you know, amalgamate all the information. So I'm going to touch on this one point. Then we're going to touch on technology a little bit. But festival bands, like, you know, I see you, John, and I see you, Dano, like your bands are festival bands. Yes, playing in venues, of course, but these are bands, like, you know, I think is an experience at a festival. Like, when I think of your bands, I think of like this, you know, this kind of like group, this random group at
we're
a
show
festival.
Bands. But,
right. Well, I think I'm not trying bands. To say, well, not, yeah, not in the sense of like Las Vegas or anything, but I think there's a festival kind of energy to that, like you being with the bagpipes and rock, and Dano being with like this, like funk, jazz, hip hop, horn sections, but it's not jazz. I mean, you're not playing jazz. You're using jazz instruments to play funk and hip hop.
Unique.
And, and Andre, you're like, I think you're more like a conventional, like the conventional band that we used to see in the 90s, let's say, I think. Where I mean, I'm trying to just kind of really confirm and grab on to what we're talking about here. How is that for you being a conventional rock band? I mean, do you find that other bands have it easier because they can appeal to mass festival crowds, or do you find it more challenging? Tell me a little about being about the conventional rock band.
So for us, I focus on our live show. Like, and that's why we've been successful in what we do. Every time we play like it's, you're entertaining. It doesn't matter if you're playing at a small venue or if it is a festival show. And every time we're finished playing the show, we go set up at our merch tent. And that's another thing, having your merch readily available. That's how we were able to pay for a good chunk of our album. And having that option to make money off your merchandise, make money off your band. So having a good image, I think that's what's made us be able to work, like you're saying, as a conventional band. We're a mainstream rock band, but have all these different influences in it. I had an interview the other day with a guy by the name of Rudy Blair, and he said, what do you describe yourself as? He said, you have some kind of doo-wop going on with your vocals, but you're a straight-up rock band, but then you have a 90s image with 90s choruses, and then you mix yourself in to have country harmonies that just seem how to work. So he's like, I understand what you're doing, but how the hell did you get here? And then, so I was like, have all these guys different influences making up your act. And that's what makes us different than your everyday rock band, where it's like, okay, these guys are going in and they're playing their four chords. We're focused on that live aspect by throwing in those little curveballs.
For us, I want to just say, Andre, for us, when I'm hearing your sound and stuff out here in the West, we hear your band like you, and like that's East Rock, East Coast Rock.
Yeah,
absolutely. We identify that.
That's an actual genre we talk about in Canada, East Coast Rock, right?
Yeah,
we say that.
That's
right?
Exactly what it is out here.
Yeah,
I mean, from here, like we have bands from Vancouver where you've got a specific sound from Vancouver that comes out of the, and then in Saskatchewan, you've got a specific sound from Saskatchewan and Alberta. Alberta, I mean, that's where Nickelback comes from, right? That's kind of that sort of sound.
Beef rock.
Where you are, I mean, the Trues.
Yeah.
You've got the Trues. You've got a few of those rock bands.
Sloan.
Exactly. And they've got their own sound, and that's East Coast Rock is what out West we call, that's East Coast Rock band. You know, when you hear
it's so true, man. It's so true. Yeah. And Dano, what do you think about what comes out of the center? What comes out of the heart of Canada? What comes out of there?
You know, like any,
Justin Bieber. Sure. Yeah.
Well, everything does. And I mean, you know, one of the issues of being in a place that's heavily populated is there are an amazing amount of great acts that you're going against, but there's also like a pile of garbage. And it's just like, that's it. You know, when you have people just starting bands that, you know, aren't ever going to tour and are, but I think that when I go to see the festivals now, and you know, when you're talking about, Andre's band, or you're talking about a rock band, I think the main thing is when a band is amazing, it really doesn't matter. You know, I look at USS as a great example of a band from Toronto, who's three guys that, and it, you know, it's like a DJ and an acoustic guitar player and a drummer. And when I hear it, I'm like, this is an undeniably strong band. And, so that's all it is for us. We're lucky because physically, you know, people see this, a bunch of people clamor on stage. And so that gets their attention. But I think when it comes down to it, there's so many different, you know, Canada is also so ethnically diverse, and especially in Ontario, like it's so diverse. So, you know, we have all sorts of, you know, of festivals that are based on different styles of music, which are like amazing. So my favorite band right now is a band from Toronto called Santarias, and they're, you know, part Chilean and part from Toronto, and they sing in Spanish. I don't know what the hell they're singing about, but it's super amazing.
Sounds groovy, yeah.
It's so groovy. And that's what it comes. Santorius. Yeah. And, we played a festival with them and it was like, you know, even when you, there you go, four piece band, bass, guitar, drummer, singer. And it was just like female singer. They just smoked it. And there's just that thing about the deadly band, you know, you just can't beat the deadly band.
About the deadly band surpasses genre. Can we say that? You know, that's logical.
Certainly. Yeah. So, you know, it must be tough. I sometimes wonder though, you know, when you're like a solo performer, because there's a million of you, but you ever hear a solo performer who like stopped you in your tracks and you're like, wow, you know, that to me is just like, you just can't beat it.
There's that.
Totally, dude.
It's magic. It's like magic's happening. Yeah.
There's nothing like that. And then it's like somebody is singing to you in a way or writing in a way that you would have never written it. And that's what I love about those fests, right? Because sometimes, you know, when you see the festival, the festival ad, Matt, you see all the bands playing and you're like, okay, I know them. Yeah. I don't know them. And then you go and check them out or you happen to hear them. And you're like, I need to go to their merch table now. So I love that. That's what, you know, I know Ontario has in spades, but having said that, you know, having played a bunch of festivals on the East Coast, like Evolve and Folly Fest, like we're always seeing like just monstrous. And we played out in Haida Gwaii, which is this island off of BC, and just saw like things I don't feel like I would have ever seen before. Just loving it.
So music takes you places in Canada too, that say are off the beat trail. So that's So the thing is like, let's kind of try to summarize Canada in our own little way here. I mean, Canada is somewhere where you're going for, there's a lot more, I guess you want to beat down, you want to be a person who wants to see things, right? You want to be able to explore. There's a lot of exploratory, let's say how diverse Canada is, you know, like Canada from west to central to, I mean, the topography literally changes. Like it actually, and other cities don't look like other cities, you know, like it's totally different as well. Like if you're on the East Coast of Canada and West Coast of Canada, they're not even, it's not even the same place. I mean, you know, so, and let's talk about a little bit about the thing about now. Why? Okay. So in my job, you know, like I'm doing this thing as a, you know, a coordinator for a showcase festival. So I'm dealing with a lot of international people all the time. And I'm doing this podcast and working with talking to companies about how they're developing acts and what they're doing and stuff like this. And like, the thing is, man, like Canada, I'm just going to say it like the most honest way I can is like, Canada is the most retro music industry in the world. Like, you know, like it's almost like Canada got, you know, like 1990 happened in Canada and then it never moved past that. You know what I mean? So it's like, the thing is, maybe, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but the thing is like most of the countries, they don't actually use Facebook for their artist stuff. Like, well, they'll be like another like inside website. And this is mostly Asia, of course, and Eastern Europe, but they'll have a separate, you know, thing to like develop their music in, right? Like, I mean, it's in Ukraine, it's called Telegram, and Russia, there's another one. Like there's just different things. And also
so many different platforms.
Yeah. There's different platforms there available. And they're like, you know, they're for the country and sometimes even specifically regionally as well in the country. Then there's other streaming services, like, you know, Japan, or like South Korea has Melon, Taiwan has KKBOX. Like they don't use the ultra mega Spotify, and they're not, and Instagram is a place for basically their fans to just play on, you know what I mean? Like they're not marketing themselves on Instagram. They're kind of being like this on, you know, they're doing their, no one can see me right now. I don't know why I just did that, but they're doing their, you know, they're doing their poses and stuff like that on Instagram, you know? So, social media in Asia and in Europe is just, it's used differently as a utility. Now, I don't mean all of Europe, like, so that's what I'm talking, but it really seems like more westernized countries are Facebook, westernized countries are Instagram, westernized countries are Spotify. And the other thing is too, is that, why are Canadians still listening to the radio? Like the thing is everyone else is like watching YouTube, right? Like that's another thing. So I want to talk about this. Why are Canadians why are Canadians still in 1990 when it comes to how they use media, you know, the paper and, you know, and I mean, they're using Spotify, which is 2018, but so is everyone else. Why the hell aren't Canadians developing on YouTube? Like, I mean, like one of the things I've noticed, like, I think Canada's the only country that doesn't have a massive amount of its artists trying to plug YouTube as hard as possible. I think it might be the only country that doesn't focus on it, to be really honest. So let's talk about that.
There certainly are those people, right? Yeah. But like you said, you know, Canada found Blue Rodeo and the Tragically Hip and fell in love and never changed. But the innovators exist, you know?
Yeah.
Like they're out there, but they're quieted by the fact that when you have terrestrial radio, the what is put on the airwaves is not of the people. It is chosen by the gatekeepers. And so yeah, those people do exist, but they are harder to find and they are more ostracized. You know, people who are making electronic music are not, you know,
I think that's it though, Dan, is what you just said there is it's ostracized because the people that are in the Canadian industry of music are like, this is what's worked for 15, 20, 30 years. We're just going to be them. Like this. And the blinders are like this. And it's really terrible. Because it's, there's so many, like as Canadians and as musicians, Canada's musicians are world renowned. We have some of the best musicians in the world that no one's ever heard. You know, no one will ever hear because our music industry won't get behind them.
You mean they should be world renowned, John? They should.
Well, they should be. Yeah, okay. I mean that's just it.
Yeah, we certainly prescribe to that thing where, you know, I've done this for 30 years, so you know I've done this for so long that I can't comb my hair different. You know, it's Canada just has a really bizarre thing in that respect. But you know, I am seeing at more and more festivals acts that are like blowing my mind, and maybe it's that I'm getting older and I'm hopelessly out of touch with what's cool, but but there are things, you know, I do believe there is a place for that. I do believe there's a place, and having traveled the world, I agree with you that, you know, things like Facebook don't hold the value that they do in Canada and the United States, certainly. So why that is, it's hard to say. If we were just brought up on a diet of April wine in our bloods, and we just never changed.
And it still is happening. It's every time I go to a festival, I mean, Street Heart, Trooper, April Wine. And it's like, again, we have to see these guys again every year.
How old are these guys? Man. These guys are like in their 70s now, right?
I know. Right? It's like, hey, these are great bands. Don't get me wrong. But that was great, you know, 20, 30 years ago. Let's get some other talent out there that we have. Now, and the music industry here in Canada will not let that happen for some stupid reason. That's what it comes down to.
And on
sorry, Andrew, like, you touched a nerve.
Yeah, no, I'm glad I did, because people need to know about this. Like I think there's inclusivity, and I think it hurts bands. I think it hurts artists.
It does.
The way that the way that Canadians hold their industry, like, Canada is probably the most funded country in the world, by the way, with, like, you know, the size of our population. And for some reason, the same
10 people get the money.
Right. The same people get the money. Now,
people every year.
I want to talk to you, Andre. You're in the East Coast, and the East Coast is, I'm going to say, man, it's bad for this. The people that are handling the dough over there, I don't even know if they know what they're doing, or they're stuck in a time warp in 1984. Like, I'm serious. Like, they're the entire way of how they're handling their business is, it's so archaic. It's almost like they just stopped caring when they were, you know, like in 1989 or 1990. Yeah. So why is the East Coast like that? And what are your challenges in the East Coast when you're like, I mean, cause Canada, everybody knows around the world that Canadians get funded for anything, you know, like,
yeah,
funding is a big deal. Are you experiencing challenges there, and why?
I think a lot of the festivals down this way are volunteer. And if someone brings in an act that's going to lose money. For example, bring in a newer act that's going to headline. They might be world famous, but they're going to lose $30,000 when they can get a band like April Wine that they know they're going to get $100,000. So I think it's the monetary issue that happens with a lot of festivals down this way. And this is it. You see the same lineup for this for 10 years in a row because they know that's their bread and butter. That's the same thing we were talking about, the radio and how the industry is. It's like they know what's not going to put them in the red. They know that something's going to be of monetary value. And I think it's scared of trying something new. Like John was saying, everything's just so straight.
That's
down
exactly
the
it. That's yeah. exactly it. They're scared of something new. But here's the thing, Evan, and you said this earlier about radio. Radio is big in Canada. And let me tell you why it is. Because everybody has to get in their car and drive 10, 12 hours. And what are you going to do? You can't watch YouTube. You listen to the radio.
Dan doesn't have to get in his car and drive.
Well, hey, all I'm saying is the rest of us do. Yeah, the rest of us have to, right? I mean, you've got in Western Canada, there's nothing but farmers here. And what do they do when they're in their farm equipment? They listen to the radio. They listen to talk radio. They listen to this, that, the other thing. They're listening to the radio.
The quote of the year.
Everybody is still
farmers here.
Well, in Western Canada, I'm just saying, you know, there's a lot of farmers. And you've got to drive somewhere, and you always are listening to the radio for the news out here.
Okay.
Something's always happening.
Let's talk about this. Wait, John, we gotta reel this back. We know in Canada, radio is important because people are traveling in their cars, or just the social condition of people. Maybe the technology is not in the car yet. I don't know. But people are not Spotifying as much. They're not YouTubing as much while they're driving. They are listening to the radio. But we're also talking about the radio has a grip. The radio has a grip on who they let, you know, get popular or not. And the thing is, they won't let this grip go off like Pink Floyd or AC/DC or like, you know,
classic rock.
They won't let that grip. And I mean, how many, it's such a small, minute amount of bands that actually get through that to become the next popular act. So does radio control who becomes popular in Canada?
Absolutely. It has a huge influence on it. Now, obviously, you know, social media, the underground movement and all that stuff, you can be super popular on social media, but you can't put bums in the seats. Why is that? Because here in Canada, people that are into social media stay at home. They don't go out and support music. Now, the people that are still supporting music are the people that are listening to radio. So, yeah, radio is controlling it here in Canada. And that's the simple fact is the people that are running the radio don't want to take the risk. I mean, back in the 90s, you would have new bands on mainstream radio all the time. How did we get to hear a band in the 80s like Bon Jovi, like The Police, like all those?
The doors. Yeah, they did.
Yeah. I mean, at one point, then it shut off. And then whoever got in charge of Canadian radio said, hey, guess what? We're not going to do anything else because we know we're going to make this amount of money on this. And that's just the way it's going to be. Now, you know, there are radio stations in Canada that are trying to fight it. But I mean, I can get in and start name calling and this, it's not going to help anything. But the thing is as musicians here in Canada, to get somebody in an industry to really buy into what you're doing, they just want to sit back in their offices and go, what's your YouTube followers? What's this follow? What's your numbers here? Well, newsflash, go to a live show and see how the people are reacting to the band.
Totally.
That's how bands get popular, and that's how it used to be. Instead of sitting on your butt or you're sitting on your ass and going, I'm just going to watch a video, you can't get the same feeling as watching a YouTube video of a band playing live as being in that vibe of the band playing live and watching everybody react to that band. And now that band could sell so many more albums and discs, because the one thing that we all recognize, if you go to a show like your favorite bands, you go to their concert, you're excited to go to that concert, you've planned it on your calendar, you've moved your work, you've done everything you can to go see that band. And then after that show, what's the first thing you're going to do is you're going to grab some of their music and take it home to relive that experience every single time you do that. I'm going to wear that t-shirt, I'm going to play that album, I'm going to download them on Spotify, I'm going to do whatever, just so I can leave my 9-to-5 job and remember what that was like at that live show. And that was where Canadian industry has dropped the ball. They just went, no, we're going to rely on the classic rocks because we don't believe this still exists.
But when it does exist, when you talk about Canadian industry, like who the hell are you talking about? Who is that?
That's a great question. I mean, you can start with CBC for one. I know, Dan, you're a big guy with CBC, but every time I turn on the CBC, I'm hearing either a folk artist or I'm hearing some refugee that I've never heard of that's got a huge story or whatever that I can't, you know, I don't get into the music. I respect it. And yes, they're great musicians, but they're not supporting anything local. It's all about what is the story behind this to a fact that none of us really, it's like, yes, there's refugees every day. Yes, there's singer-songwriters every day. For guys like me and Andre, for rock music, you don't hear our stuff on CBC. You never will. Why? Because the content is not what they can sell.
Right. So, Dan, let's talk about that. But I mean, they're federally funded too. So I think the thing is they're trying to focus on...
They want a story.
Canadian culture thing, right? So, Dan, can you talk a little bit about that? Like, let's talk... And there's tiers of radio. Let's talk about that too. There's actually commercial radio, the highest commercial. Then there's like sub radios. And then there's national radio. Can you take us through that, Dan, a bit?
Yeah. So, you know... So obviously, yeah, there's these national radio stations that can go coast to coast, and they have regional programming that happens within them. So CBC would have, if I was to be in Sault Ste. Marie, it would have things like Points North, which we wouldn't have in Southern Ontario, things like that. Or in, you know, Quebec, I'm sure they have Francophone programming as well. But there's also, yeah, there's, you know, there's local radio all the way down to, you know, minute college radio. Now, certainly, there is not a fairness there. But one of the things I have come to love about Spotify, and I don't love a ton about it, is that when I think of the way that people can stream music now, and obviously the money is an issue, but outside of that, we've created this playing field that is level, like, you know, it's the same platform. I'm on the same platform as Guns N' Roses, as these guys, as everyone, right?
Yeah.
You know,
it's so really accessible.
Absolutely. And yeah. And
people's
and
taste.
I always say that, yeah, and I always used to say this thing to people who would be angry and belligerent about Spotify. And I say, well, I would understand you because I do believe that the payment is not enough. However, as someone who started touring in the late 90s, if you would have given us the ability to be in anyone's pocket at any time, every single person's pocket at any time, and it was up to me just to convince them to click the button, I would have paid anything.
Exactly.
Anything for that. And I wouldn't have been worried about the money. Now, the other thing is, I always laugh too, because, you know, sometimes when people decry it, I say, well, you know, they can buy your CD. Why are they not?
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of the strange things about this time in music is that in some ways it's more important to be readily available to people than to monetize off them, because we all have, you know, I wake up in the morning and like I scroll my phone before I do anything. I don't even want to. Yeah. And it's just programmed into my brains now. And we have this shorter attention span, and we need to get to people quicker. I agree. People talk about record sales, and I lament that. But I feel like Andre was mentioning earlier when we were talking about merch. Well, you know, if we can get them hooked through some music ahead of time, amazing. But mostly now when we're talking about selling things, it's in that 5 to 20 minutes after a show where they're in the hot zone from seeing something that's blown their minds. That is, you know, that's the other.
That's where you capitalize at.
Yeah, that's the other metric. Now, I don't disagree with you. As someone who like predominantly listens to much heavier music than I play, there is like basically almost no terrestrial radio outlet for it. That's it. I think just to be completely honest, it's like outside of a few satellite radio stations, there are some that call themselves hard rock, but what is hard rock to me and what is hard rock to them? Clearly there's a difference of opinion. Right. And, so to assume that it's fair is absolutely not the case. And it's, that's the dance we're all doing now is
what
works for you, what is important to you? You know, I'm like, some people believe, you know, I want to record analog. That's important to me. I just want to sell albums. That's important to me. Some people live on, they want more clicks, more likes. That to me always seems superfluous. And if that works for you, great. I'm always worried that some people rise too fast and they fall too fast. So I think that there is, it's a real dance and everyone is really trying to figure it out. Now, I do worry that my number one worry in the next year is with people hitting the road now. And as we know, 2022 is going to be a massive music year. God, please willing. And if that is the case, there's going to be a bottleneck of bands hitting the road and releasing albums and things like that. And what we need to hope is,
how do you stand out in the crowd?
How do you stand out in the crowd and making sure that, you know, nobody is taken advantage of. I don't want the venues taken advantage of. I don't want the bands taken advantage of because people are so hungry. You know, we all have to give and take a little bit because we're humans. Our venues that we love, that we grew up in are hurting. The bands are, some of them are selling off their trailers to pay rent. We need to figure out, you know, whenever I've already booked a lot of things and people are saying we can pay you this. And I'm honestly telling you, I just can't do, like, I can do this guarantee versus the door because that's where we're at. And these are places that would never give that. And so for once I'm saying, let's do that, you know, because you've been good to us in the past. This is a time for us to have this kind of brotherhood.
Camaraderie
thing.
I'm with you. Like,
yeah.
Everything and you just said there is so relatable.
I think there's a lot that we can do for each other. And so that's why these conversations are super important. And Canada's vast, like just unbelievably vast. Yeah. And so like we, one of the best ways, you know, if I go to Saskatoon where like I'm not from anywhere near the prairies, I'm reaching out to local musicians and people I don't know. Or
have you heard from somebody you know just, from there?
Yeah, exactly. And you're reaching out and man, where do you play? What do you suggest? And
who's
and
the band?
exactly. Predominantly bands will give you that person. If you come to me and say, man, I'm going to Hamilton. I'm going to like, who should I look up? I'm going to listen to your stuff and I'm going to like try to find it. That is the kind of stuff we can all admit. There's all bands that we love, that we've toured with. And it's like anytime you've toured with another band, their music becomes the soundtrack to your tour. I love that stuff. We're lucky dudes.
I agree. I mean, Spotify absolutely is the ultimate jukebox that we all wanted as we were growing up. You can have tastes of like, say, Guns N' Roses, and then you can listen to Dolly Parton, and you can, you know, if that's your thing. I mean, no, honestly, like if that's your thing, that's awesome. For us though, radio, if we're getting back to the radio conversation, I just wanted to finish off is when Evan asked, you know, who is in charge of it? Well, you got to look at the program directors and the shareholders and the shareholders want to make their money. And they're like, this is our money. This is our money. And then the program directors, well, I need to do what the shareholders tell us to do, but it's going to have to come a time where the program directors are going to say, look, we can't play classic rock anymore. Nobody cares. You've got to try something new. You got to take that chance. And now more than ever, because we've just come out of, you know, an interesting time in the world's history, that we should take advantage of it and embrace change, embrace the fact that, you know, there are other things out there than classic rock or folk music or whatever. I mean, even country music to its point has become not even country music anymore. It's not, it's pop rock. You've got some bands trying to come back with old style country, which is country, but you know, not to get into genres, that conversation just about with radio though, you've got to take the chance and the program directors and the shareholders have to realize exactly what Dan says. We got to give and take a little bit here. We got to support these other up and coming musicians. We can't, you know, ZZ Top. Yeah, they're a great band, but they've had their shot.
Well, let's talk. Wait. Let's talk honestly, because I'm gonna encroach on what you guys are saying here. And the fact is, economically, like, the radio stations might be making money because they're selling advertisements, right? So they want to, you know, people will bid for advertisements.
Appeal to that market, yeah.
More money if they're going to put on Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd or Back in Black by AC/DC. But right. Essentially what they're also doing is they're killing the industry. Because what's happening is they're not popular. If they were popularizing new acts, let's say, and we have to talk about good acts, like you have to deserve to be on the radio. Like, you know, like, let's not just say, hey, man, you've got to put whatever we tell you to put on there. But
right.
You got to deserve to be on the radio. Too.
It would also increase the actual economy, the music economy in Canada. Of course it would, because you would have a surge of popular Canadian acts. Right?
If absolutely. People are listening
to the radio and they have this programming that whatever's on the FM dial is like what I, you know, what's popular. Wouldn't that help?
But certainly, but haven't we at least, you know, like, I'm not even playing devil's advocate here. I mean, we have, at least we have CanCon and again, right. CanCon is a little bit diluted because again, it only really just seems to touch on like a certain, like whatever the genre of the station is, but right. You know, so CanCon, for those who aren't familiar, you know, Canadian content, we have to, I think it's 20%, maybe 30%.
Right.
It's a reason there are certain Canadian rock stars who maybe don't exist outside of one wonders, does a band like the Tragically Hip take over the ad populum, the cultural lexicon, if there is no CanCon, you know? Right. So at least there are some things that are pointing in the right direction, but yeah, it can be very, I think you do see disenfranchised bands. Because they know that the things like radio are unattainable. And groups like mine have just basically just given up. Like, we just know where our bread and butter is. And, you know,
that's it. You found your market.
Niche.
Your niche. Yeah.
And didn't you say you were on Hockey Night in Canada? Is that right?
Yeah. So this is for us.
So that's like a massive license for
3.1 million people were watching at that moment. And it's
God bless you. What an amazing thing. Good for you.
Oh, dude. I've been a Habs fan since I was 2 years old and literally heard my song going into overtime, the unreleased song. And this all came about from a festival that we were at a few years ago showcasing. It was Music Nova Scotia, Nova Scotia Music Week. And this guy seen our band play. And this is why every show you play to impress. And he said, guys, this is incredible. What's your plans? What's your album? We released an album a day after we were a band. We started recording the album. He said, the album's not great. It doesn't show what the fuck you guys just did on stage. He's like, show me this. So years after that, we took a chance. Yeah. So
he took a chance on you guys and said, we need to play this on Hockey Night in Canada, which is a huge deal in Canada. But anyways,
the hugest,
right?
Yeah, exactly. The hugest.
Yeah. So, but he took the point is he took a chance on a band that he saw live and dug the vibe and was like, these guys are great.
This guy didn't even see us. This is his friend that he knew worked for Hockey Night in Canada. I put a montage together. I had the idea. We had this song called Overtime that's on the upcoming album. And I'm like, man, I'm going to put all these clips together of Montreal scoring in overtime, make a montage. And once they won that Vegas Golden Knights series, I posted it on my Facebook. I said, how do I get a hold of Sportsnet? I said, this is dead serious. And I had this guy message me. He's like, I'm sending it off to them. And they messaged me back. He said, you went the extra mile to put in your song within a montage. So I watched it. You know what I mean? I'm not just throwing something out to the dead air. So I think a little bit of the extra work is what helps.
And he took a chance, though. That's the thing. Yeah,
totally.
You're not a huge, you know, you're not Honeymoon Sweet or Kim Mitchell or all these classic rock bands.
Honeymoon Sweet. Oh, my God.
Come on. These are all Canadian classic rock bands that you hear on the radio all the time and see at the festivals all the time. You're not that. He took a chance and went, hey, let's play this at this time. Because it can help you, but at the same time, maybe it's a good song. Why not?
John, you're like, you're hitting something. You guys are all saying some things, and I gotta, this is, there's some summarization here, because there's a realization here we have to just really acknowledge, is that it almost seems like there's some kind of nepotism almost, like, because if you own the airwaves, you're going to get famous, and then you have this fame forever. But Dan, I mean, you're doing awesome in Canada. Each of your bands, each of you guys, the reason why I'm talking to you guys is because
it's all different too, right?
Things. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And certainly it's like I said, you know, like, and there's radio famous, and then there's people who, you know, when I was touring, when I toured the United States, especially, I was really amazed when it came down to the fact that there were playing in, people in a Celtic circuit. There were people playing in this country circuit. There was all these different circuits that, like, to me, I never even heard of. And these people were making great livings. It's like progressive rock. The people who you would never hear Dream Theater on the radio, and I hate it, but I'm amazed that there are guys who make a living doing that. So, you know, Metallica. We can't put all our eggs into the radio.
You can't
basket.
Be good at everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and no. You know, and I'm so lucky that, you know, paying the mortgage playing music is just like, I also understand that, like, I have to have a very different view on it than most people. I literally wake up each day and think, I want to sell one thing here. Mm-hmm. And that's like, and that's what makes it the job. Otherwise, you know, have to go out and work for a paycheck, which during COVID,
have to.
I was doing. Yeah,
man. we all had to. We all had to. Come on.
I was on the roof the last three days.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, I was embalming people. So trust me, I know the deal.
What? Are you kidding me?
No, man. Mortician.
Are you a mortician?
Yeah, dude.
Really?
Yes, really. Wow.
I hope I never see you.
Well, at work, you hope you never see me.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, there is so much success that can go around. And, you know, as you start growing up, and we're, you know, with every year you have a birthday, you start to realize that the other bands are not your competition. You know, you are your competition, and you just stay the course and just keep doing your thing, because we get so conditioned to being, when we're young, we're arm folding at other people's concerts. And the older you get, you're cheering louder because you're just happy that people are doing it. It's in the same way that when old people see little kids in the grocery store, they lose their mind. They're so happy. Yeah, it's like with our age, we start to learn that what is
not
actually, no, it's not a competition like amongst
everybody. It's competition with yourself. Yeah,
it's competition with yourself. Yeah. And, you know, we're all just trying to just touch the cup for a minute. You know, like none of us expect to exactly. Yeah. None of us are expecting to like retire off it. Like that would be amazing. But, you know, like that's just so unrealistic. But like to imagine like some of us who've done it for 20 years or so, like that's amazing. Like some people never do a thing. And Canada, I like to say this about, you know, Canada, like at least it has offered us some opportunity to do some really impressive things and to go to beautiful parts of our country and unbeautiful parts. And it's just such a wonderful thing. We're not in competition with each other.
No, it's great.
Right.
All right. Well, I think that's kind of where we're at here. And you know, even if you can't get on the major radio, Canada still has a lot to offer, you know, to build a band, to make money, to try to do your thing.
A lot of diversity here that can be taken advantage. That's for sure.
Diversity in culture, diversity in business. So, I mean, it sounds
like your ducks in order.
Right. So be organized.
It's a business.
And that's why, like, talk to these guys, right? So like Andre, Dano, John, I mean, these are guys you want to talk to about and learn about the Canadian music industry and how they're going about it. Cause all three of them have successful bands inside of the country of Canada. So thanks for joining me today, guys. I mean, I know I ran over, like we went in about an hour and a half here. I'm sorry, but there's just so
much. Cheers, boys. Good to see you.
Cheers.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to kind of try to get an amalgamation of if anyone was watching this from outside of Canada or even inside, just about how they would go about those things. So I'm going to leave you now, but thanks a lot, guys. And I'll be catching you back in Canada live at Heart. All right.
Yep.
Cheers.
Cheers, boys.